Hare Krishna. Dear devotees, I invite you to come a little closer if you like. If you don't like, well, I don't know. It's just, this world is voluntary. Prabhupada, the devotee, asked Prabhupada once, do we have to do something? I can't remember what that was. And Prabhupada said, well, no. You don't even have to breathe if you don't want to. It's an old Prabhupada story. Now, one little, what would you say, managerial announcement from, who is it? Ananta Shesh Prabhu. If you have not yet registered for this Brahma Samhita course, please do so today by going to the Mayapur Institute office, right? Office, which is in the Chaitanya Bhavan. Okay, I leave that with you. It's a request from the management. Now, did you all bring your Brahma Samhitas?
Yes.
Thank you. Well done. Congratulations. Those who need a Russian translation, it is there just at the back there. Mataji Malati Devi Dasi is the Perivodchik Anabodat Pomagat Vam. Okay. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Good, thank you for coming and thank you for coming on time. We are going to continue with verses 3, 4 and 5. We briefly touched on them right at the end yesterday. And they are particularly 3 and 4 and partially 5. 3 and 4, though, they're very much about the yantra, the famous yantra, which is depicted on the back page. I think all of you know that by now. The yantra. And, well, let's just read the couple of verses again. It is, well, you know, interesting little point. You can just Google it. Just Google Goloka Yantra, and you'll come up by the mercy of Google with just all these yantras, including this very one. Yeah, in color. I mean, this is actually in color, but our printer is not. And different, you'll find different versions of the Goloka Yantra. Yeah. The one we have, it's like a simple version. There are more complex versions. But this is sort of good enough in principle. So, okay, I'm going to read verse 3 again. Please, if you got your book, your electronic version, whatever, please look at verse 3 right now. We noted, of course, that in the Sanskrit, the verse begins, Karnikaram Mahad Yantram. If anyone has any doubts whether it is talking about a yantra or not, please just take it from that, the first line of the first half of verse 3. It's definitely talking about the yantra. And the idea of the yantra is to help us meditate on Goloka or Gokula, complete with mantras. So it's a whole program for arousing your consciousness of the holy Dharma of the Lord. So anyway, here we go, verse 3. The world, you understand world in, I don't know if you're from botanical backgrounds, any of you are botanists. The world of a flower means the very center from which the petals sort of develop, expand like that. So the world of that transcendental lotus, the very center, the heart of it, is the realm wherein dwells Krishna. It is a hexagonal figure. And we'll have another look at the yantra itself. I mean, you can look at it as we go if you like. It's a hexagonal figure, the abode of the indwelling, predominated and predominating aspect of the Absolute. Predominated being Srimati Radharani, and predominating being Lord Krishna himself. Like a diamond, the central supporting figure of self-luminous Krishna stands as the transcendental source of all potencies. The holy name, consisting of 18 transcendental letters, is manifested in a hexagonal figure with sixfold divisions. Are you clear on what that means? Anyone who's not clear on what that means, what he's referring to? Okay.
Not clear.
Were you here yesterday? That's a very good reason why you wouldn't be. It's, but have you got the study guide? Look at, okay, you're looking at the back page. Yeah, that's the yantra, Mahad Yantra, the great yantra, the Goloka or Gokula yantra. And right in the center, look in the center, is a hexagon. You understand hexagon? Six-sided figure. So that is the world. That's the center of the lotus of Goloka or Gokula Vrindavan, within which lives Radha and Krishna. And the 18-syllable mantra is inside the hexagon. Are you second initiated? Not. Anyway, it's the sixth Gayatri mantra. Of course, you also might not read Sanskrit. It helps to read Sanskrit or just Hindi. The mantra is there. We'll have a look at it again in a minute or two. But the mantra is around the inside of the hexagon in six divisions, six words. Yeah, of 18 transcendental letters, but each letter is a syllable. Each letter, it says 18 transcendental letters. It's not as we understand letters, it's not 18, it's 18 syllables. Because in Sanskrit, generally, what do you call them? Consonants. Not just generally, but I think in all cases, consonants are made up of two letters, like na, ga, ma, Pa. Pa is P-A, but it's one letter in Sanskrit. Pa. Ka is two letters as we, you know, as it's depicted in English or I think any Western language. But in Sanskrit, ka is one letter. Am I right? Yes. So therefore it's 18 letters, 18 syllables, but divided into six. One word on each of the six sides of the hexagon of the yantra. Okay, now we're going to go on to four, and then we'll come back and just have a look at a little of the detail of each verse, but let's get the sort of overall picture of what's being talked about here. This is now verse 4. The world, the center of that eternal realm, Gokula, is the hexagonal abode of Krishna in terms of the yantra. Right. We're clear on that, aren't we? Its petals are the abodes of the gopis. We'll have a look at that part of it shortly. So its petals are the abodes of the gopis who are part and parcel of Krishna, to whom they are most lovingly devoted and are similar in essence, meaning he is spiritual, they are spiritual. The petals shine beautifully like so many balls. The extended leaves of that lotus are the garden-like dharma. That is the spiritual abode of Sri Radhika, the most beloved of Krishna. I think before we go on to five, let's just look a little more closely at this three and four, what's being said in three and four. So, a couple of important things. It's in your study guide, basically, sort of. So three, I don't know if you had a chance to read through the verses and purports last night or this morning. Three is talking about how the pastimes, I mean the purport particularly, the pastimes of Krishna are either manifested or unmanifested. Depends. And you go, if you just look at the purport there, the second sentence, the pastimes in Vrindavan visible to mortal eyes, means Krishna's pastimes when he was here 5,000 years ago, they're called the manifestive or manifested leela. And those which are not visible are non-manifested. It's a pretty straightforward idea. What he's referring to there is either one, pastimes which are going on in Vrindavan when Krishna is not there, in the sense of how he was 5,000 years ago. You know, he's always there, but you can't see him very often, only when he comes from time to time. Otherwise, he's not there. He's not visible. But he's there and his pastimes are going on. But because they're not visible to people like us, unless you have transcendental senses, and, you know, with great respect, I suspect none of us, have transcendental senses. So even though you've been to Vrindavan, I imagine, you didn't see Krishna running around here or there, did you? Did anyone? No. So therefore they're called non-manifested. But the idea here is there are processes, or rather a process which is divided into two parts, through which you, anyone, us, we, can actually see the non-manifested pastime. Are you with me? Means a process which, if you follow it, when you go to Vrindavan at some point in the future, you would be able to see Krishna, the gopis, and their pastimes going on. Follow the idea there? But you've got to follow the process, which is in two parts. And therefore, we want to look a little further down in the purport, still in the first paragraph. It is, let's see, what would you say, towards the maybe two-thirds of the way down the first paragraph. The manifestations of the non-manifested pastimes of Krishna with regard to the conditioned souls, that's us, are twofold. Or I would say, yeah, twofold. It appears to be, to me, to be more like two stages in a process. Number one, do you see number one there? Have you got the place? Yeah. Number one, worship through the channel of the mantras, inaudibly recited, liberating, self-dedicatory, transcendental sounds. That's his explanation of what a mantra is. Anyway, we all have a basic idea, at least, of what a mantra is. And then two, the spontaneous outflow of the heart's spiritual love for Krishna, which is more advanced, is very advanced, actually. It's referring basically to the stage of at least bhava, or somewhere around bhava, maybe prema. Whereas just chanting the mantras, and it's not mentioned here, but using the yantra, then a devotee in the earlier stage will start developing and gradually come to the point of developing love for Krishna, and in this way gradually come to see Krishna. Is this clear? Is anyone bewildered? More than 50%? If less than 50%, we can carry on. And, you know, it's interesting. You see, just after point number two, Sri Jiva Goswami has said, you see that? Srila Bhaktisiddhanta is referring to Krishna Sandarbha, because in Krishna Sandarbha, Srila Jiva Goswami gives a detailed description of this whole process, which he's just sort of, you know, presenting in a very simple form. And he actually gives the names of these two types of practices, or two levels of practice, right? The first one is called, I didn't put it in your notes, but anyway, it's called Mantra Upasana. Or, according to Sanskrit grammar, you can call it mantra-upasana, one word. Otherwise, it's mantra-upasana, U-P-A-S-A-N-A. That's number one, worship through the mantras while using the yantra, Mahad Yantra. And the second... I was. One and two, you got point one and two there in the first paragraph of the purport of verse three in the actual book. Verse three, purport, first paragraph, about two-thirds or something away down, you'll see one and two. So one, now I said that the Sanskrit terms, they're not given here. They're given in Krishna Sandarbha, where Jiva Goswami fairly elaborately describes these two levels. So mantra upasana, and the second is called swarasiki. It's one word, swarasiki. S-V-A-R-A-S-I-K-I. Swarasiki. You know, we come across the word. Where, could anyone tell me where we come across the word? Swarasiki? Swarasiki sun. It's in Nectar of Instruction. It's in one of the, I forget which verse it is, but it's in one of the verses in, I think you'd say, the second half of Nectar of Instruction. Okay. So there you go. I think that's enough on that. Okay. Just look at the bottom of this first paragraph. Yes. Okay. So there he explains a bit more about the 18 transcendental letters. So he says, as for example, clean, Krishnaya, Govindaya, Gopijana, Vallabhaya, Swaha. Can you see that? You see that there? This is the mantra, if you recall, when we looked at the yantra last night, it is around the inside of the hexagon. We'll look at it again in a minute, just so you can catch it. So, yeah. So the first word is Krishna. Well, let's have a look. Turn to the yantra. You see the hexagon, right? It's the very inside part. Inside, but at the top. Inside the hexagon, but at the top, is Krishnaya. Coming around to our right of the hexagon, Govindaya. Govindaya. Some of the Sanskrit here, that whoever did this, it's not totally clear, and some of it is fractionally inaccurate, actually. But it'll do. So Krishnaya, Govindaya, then around again, Gopijana. Gopijana. Then at the bottom, inside the hexagon, but it's sort of upside down. If you want to read it, you've got to turn the thing out the other way. Vallabhaya. Can you see that?
Yeah.
Then coming around on the other side, swa. It's a rather unclear S, but anyway, swa, swa. And coming around again, approaching the top bit, ha. Got it. Okay, there you go. There it is. So that's the mantra inside the yantra. Let's have a look. The second paragraph, right at the beginning of it, the hexagonal great transcendental machinery. Machinery. Yantra, of course, in a sort of classic sense, means a machine. Yeah. Yantra Rudani Mayaya. I imagine you remember from Bhagavad Gita, what is it, 1860 or 61? Yantra Rudhani. What is it, 1860 maybe? Or 61? So yantra means machine. In this context, it's not really a machine as we understand machines, but it is a device. It's a device. Yeah. A meditational device to assist us in our meditation on the mantra, which is, or mantras actually, which are inside or around the yantra. So he says, the hexagonal great transcendental machinery is in this wise, means it's set up like that. The principal seed, that is, kleem, is situated in the instrument, in the yantra, as the central pivot. It's right in the very center. We pointed that out yesterday, and more will be said in the purport of the following verse. I think that's enough on three. Let's go to four again. The world is the hexagonal abode of Krishna, hexagonal in the yantra. Its petals are the abodes of the gopis. Let us look again at our yantra. And anyway, I know that a lot of you are not fluent in Sanskrit, but when you look at the yantra, when it's the right way up, it has the text, there's some lines of text above it. That's the right way up. Okay. Don't look at it upside down. Look at it the right way up, like this. Then you'll see, you see some petals. You see there's a circle around this, now the hexagon and its extensions. It looks like a six-sided star now. So there's a circle. Above the circle are the petals, which are being talked about right here. And the first petal, immediately above, directly above, what it says is, Sri Lam Lalitaya Swaha. We should give you a little Sanskrit lesson. It's a lot of fun. Yeah. Lalitaya is the word, the longer word, in the center. Right. Lalitaya. Lalitaya. Aya. When a Sanskrit word has aya at the end as the suffix, it means to. To. Krishnaya. To Krishna, Atmano Bhagavate Vasudevaya, to Vasudev, Lalitaya. Well, Shreem, and it looks like Lam, it is Lam, they are Bij mantras, like Om. Om is a Bij mantra, Bij meaning seed. Means it helps you enter the mantra. It's not exactly part of the mantra. It's a step, a stepping stone to enter the mantra. like we all know, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, right? We're offering our namo, offering our obeisances to Bhagavate, the Lord, Vasudevaya, to Vasudev, Krishna, who's the son of Vasudev. Now, an interesting little point of Sanskrit grammar is the Om is not part of the statement. It's an extra thing. If you want to say, I offer my obeisances, or we offer our obeisances to the Supreme Lord Vasudev, you can just say, Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, and you've said it. But with, you know, Shruti mantras, a certain very large category of Vedic mantras, they always put Om at the beginning. And it's just to help you enter the mantra. It's not part of the actual statement that you're expressing when you repeat the mantra. How does that sound? Are you with me on that one?
Yes.
Yeah? So it's a Bij mantra. Om is like the classic Bij mantra, the most common. Others are Kleem, which we're just coming across and we'll discuss a little bit more. Kleem, Shreem, Kreem. Kreem is here also. Shrom. You know, we chant in the Nrisimhadev prayers at some point. Isn't it? Shrom, it's a Bij mantra. Lum is a Bij mantra. There's many. Aim is a Bij mantra. They're just to help you enter the actual mantra. So, back to the petals. At the top then, Shreem, Lum, Lalitaya, Swaha. We all know Swaha means we're offering. So we, to Lalita, we're offering to Lalita. So these are the petals. And how many petals are there? Devotees. There are eight. There are eight petals. There's six sides on the hexagon. But the petals around the circle, there are eight main petals. They're for the Astasakis.
What are the six triangles around the hexagon?
Those are, you know, I think they are like poetic license or artistic license of the person who drew this. Yeah, it's sort of, and they've got Bij mantras in them. Shreem, like directly above Krishnaya. You see where Krishnaya is. It's the top part of the hexagon when the hexagon is the right way up. Above it is Shreem and Ram. Shreem and Ram. The next one to the right, over Govindaya, is Kleem. The next one is Shreem Ram, then Kleem, Shreem Ram, and Kleem is coming back on the other side. The darker ones are Kleem, and the slightly lighter ones are Shreem and Ram. And don't ask me why they're there. I think it was just, you know, for artistic purposes. There's another mantra going around the inside of the circle. We're going to come to that in due course. Don't worry about that right now. And then, you know, if you can read Sanskrit or Hindi, you know, it'll be, and if you've got second initiation already, it'll be pretty obvious what that is. So let's have a look at the petals, though, the places of the gopis, which, you know, we're taking this now from verse 4. So Lalita's at the top, coming around to our right. is, what is it now? Shuk, it's a little hard to say. Soul, Rangain Soul, or something like that. But it's then Vishakaya Swaha. The Sanskrit in the first line there is just, what would any of you say it's saying? Regain? I can't. Oh, lung. Lungay song could be. And then Vishakaya, because she's the second of the Astasakis. Coming around to the right, it's Shrim Chitraya, Chitrayai. Anyway, it's Chitra Swaha. Chitrayai. I don't know if it makes sense grammatically, but it's Chitra. Then coming around again, it's, what is it? No, I know it's Induleka. But what's the Beej mantra? Lame, glam. Rim. Or maybe, I don't know. Okay, maybe it's Rim. Induleikaya Namaha Swaha. So anyway, that's Induleika. Then right at the bottom is Champak Latteya, Latoya. You know, the spelling is not so good. But it's Champak Latta Swaha, with no Beej mantra for some reason. Probably they just forgot it. Next one, now we're coming around, we're starting to come up the other side. This is Ranga Devi. It's Ranga Devi. Yeah. Shreem Ram, Ranga Devi, something, Swaha. And yeah, okay, and that's it. Did we see Sue Devi? Where was Sue Devi? Huh? But there's eight, isn't there? 1, 2, 3, 4. So Sue Devi must be there. Where's Sue Devi? Lovely. Oh, we haven't. We haven't gone around completely, have we? Ranga Devi, Tunga Vidya, Sue Devi. Sue Devi is the last one before you come back to Lalita, which is at the top, where, you know, just beneath our printing. Those are the abodes of the gopis. And then the extended leaves. Do you get the... Let us just run through again. Top is Lalita, then it's Vishakha, then it's Chitra, then it's Induleika, then it's Champaklata, then it's Ranga Devi, then it's Tunga Vidya, then it's Sudevi. And then you've got the darker leaf, the darker little shapes in between each of the Astasaki's petals. They are the leaves being referred to in the translation of verse 4, the last sentence. The extended leaves of that lotus are the garden-like Dharma. It's the gardens of Srimati Radharani. And they've all got clean. They are the darker ones, and they've all got clean on them. Okay. Any questions on that? Anyone completely bewildered? I don't think you should be. It's, you know, kind of. It's okay. a little look at the purport. It is like about halfway down, Sri Radha Krishna. Well, no, let's just read the whole purport. The transcendental Gokula is shaped like the lotus. The eternal world is like a hexagonal figure. In that, the entities Sri Radha Krishna appearing in the form of a mantra consisting of 18 transcendental letters are centered. The propagating manifestations emanating from the chit potency, chit meaning potency of knowledge or consciousness, are present there with the said entities as the center. Said entities meaning Radha and Krishna. Sri Radha Krishna is the primary cause or the seed himself. Gopal Tapani, it's an Upanishad, says, Omkar signifies the all-powerful Gopal and his potency, and Kleem is the same as Omkar. Hence, Karma Beej, that's Kleem, by the way. Anyway, Karma Beej is Kleem. He doesn't tie it in completely. Karma Beej is Kleem. They're all Beej mantras, remember? Om, Aim, Shreem, etc., etc. So the Karma Beej means the seed of love, actually, of transcendental loving desire, or the primary cause of all love, is connotative of the entities Sri Radha Krishna. Means it's referring to, it's indicating it is. So back to the yantra, the right way up, with the text at the top, right in the center is clean. And that's Radha Krishna. That's all we're going to say about the hexagon and, you know, the leaves and the petals. We're going to say more about what's outside the outer circle. But anything inside the outer circle, you see there's two circles, right? That's about as much as what we're going to say about what's inside the outer circle in the yantra. Are you all right with that? Because you shouldn't be, because there's another couple of things we have to mention. Inside the outside circle, inside the outside, it sounds cryptic, is, would you believe, the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Why not? Can you see it there?
Yes.
Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. I hope you can read enough Sanskrit to recognize the Hare Krishna Mantra when it's there. Can you? Can you see the mantra?
Yes.
Inside the outside circle. We are going to go back to the mantra which is inside the inner circle, but only when we come to a little bit later. Hopefully, it will be today. Yeah. Where Lord Brahma meets Krishna. Krishna gives him that, this mantra, the one which is inside the inner circle. Okay. So you had your chance to ask questions. Yes, Prabhu.
Is the mantra from the outside or the outer circle?
The outer. That is just Sanskrit alphabets. It's not the complete Sanskrit alphabet, actually, but it's just different, a selection of letters from the Sanskrit alphabet. And if you want to know why they're there, you'd have to ask the person who put it together. It doesn't make very good sense, frankly, but it's more like an artistic device, I think. Mataji? Okay. You can't read Sanskrit or Hindi? All right.
I can read Spanish.
Huh?
I can read Spanish.
Oh, sorry. Okay. You see the outer circle?
Yes.
Right. That's pretty obvious. At the top, you see where's the top, right? The top is underneath the text. There is Hare in the white space. Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, the leaves and the petals.
And then this one, I want to say
the
alphabet.
The ones outside, immediately outside the outer circle.
Yeah.
These are Sanskrit letters, Sanskrit alphabets of different types.
How do you understand the nine purpose of function of
yeah, right. Okay. You know, the thing is this. We don't use yantras in our personal practice. At least put it this way. Srila Prabhupada never instructed, that I'm aware, that we should, you know, like we worship Shilas, we worship deities, we chant our rounds, we chant Gayatri, we read the books, all these spiritual kind of sadhana activities. But Prabhupada didn't instruct us to use yantras. But they are part of the Vedic tradition. And they're part of the Vaishnava Vedic tradition. It is an old type of sadhana. It's an old type of sadhana in which the devotees meditate. We mentioned a few times already. It's like an aid, something to help you with meditation on Goloka or Gokula. Along with mantras. Sometimes there are no mantras in some yantras. Just look on Google. Just do a search for Goloka Yantra and you'll see there's a number of yantras. There's loads of yantras. Some of them have nothing written. It's just, you know, shapes. So that's what they are. People would stare at the yantra and read, generally they would read the mantra or mantras, and this would help them focus. Because the yantra is a type of depiction of the spiritual world. In the case of the Goloka or Gokula yantra, you know, you get Ganesh yantras, you get Shiva yantras, you get all sorts of yantras, which depict the abodes of those particular personalities. We're, of course, interested in Krishna consciousness and not in demigods. So this is an old traditional practice for helping focus the mind on the Lord and the abode of the Lord, generally while chanting mantras addressing the Lord. And they're empowered. Yantras generally are installed, like deities are installed. And therefore, the understanding is the place is there and the people are there. Because it's authorized depiction for the purpose of sadhana, of the abode of the Supreme Lord. Yes.
Can we not say that even without Anubhava we will be able to achieve the same results?
Well, you mean without these, the mantra here, Krishna? With just the Hare Krishna mantra?
And without other practices which our Guru has
to do. I don't quite get that point. But, you know, in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Lord Chaitanya says, you don't need anything other than the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. It's a famous verse. It's Madhya Leela chapter 15. I forget the verse number. 108. A good number. Yeah. But in the purport, Srila Prabhupada, it's an extensive purport. Srila Prabhupada refers to Jiva Goswami's comments that in Kali Yuga, generally people also need to do deity worship. And Prabhupada says, therefore we have the practice of giving second initiation, without which someone is not really meant to do deity worship. So Lord Chaitanya says, just chant Hare Krishna. But as Prabhupada and Jiva Goswami explain it in that purport, they say that Lord Chaitanya is referring to offenseless chanting. And for people like us coming from Kali Yuga, like deep Kali Yuga backgrounds, to just offenselessly chant Hare Krishna is generally asking too much. So you need something to help you come, sort of cleanse yourself so that you could start or, you know, progress towards offenseless chanting, and that is deity worship. And therefore you need second initiation, you need Gayatri mantras for deity worship. Is that okay? Madhya Leela 15108. Yeah. Prabhu.
You mentioned Beej Mantra.
Beej, yeah.
Okay,
etc. Sure.
So these are one word. So we call it Beej Mantra or Beej word?
Mantra. They're called Beej Mantras.
What's one word?
It's one word. It's a mantra. And they're like stepping stones. Well, beej, you know what beej means. It means seed. Yeah. So they're to help us enter the mantra, whatever, the main mantra. Yeah, yeah. In a Shruti form, Shruti. Form of practice. Our practice, now we're getting into, you know, slightly too technical, I think, Vedic conceptions. We are not following a Shruti practice. We're following a Smriti practice, Puranic. Puranic, Srimad Bhagavatam is Puranic. And Bhagavad Gita is part of Mahabharata. So it's itihasa. That's all part of Smriti. Slightly different form of Sanskrit. And, you know, when you find the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra in the Shruti literatures, you know what they are? You do. They're the four Vedas and their immediate corollaries, the Upanishads, Brahmanas, Aranyakas. You find the Hare Krishna mantra there. But at the beginning is what? Om. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. But we don't chant Om because we're not following, you know, the old Vedic Shruti approach. The only time we use Bij mantras is in our Gayatris. Are you second initiated? Anyway, in due course, you'll be given 7 mantras. Each one has a Bij mantra. And otherwise, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Yeah, that we use, you know, generally don't find other mantras that we use with Bij mantras at the beginning. It indicates they're Shruti mantras. Anyone else? Yes, Prabhu.
Just a clarification. You were saying that because the chanting of the holy name is sufficient, it is done offenselessly.
That's what Prabhupada says in the purport.
So, maybe what is given to bring us to the platform of chanting offenses.
That's correct.
But then it seems to indicate that then we need something else than the holy name.
The idea is that it really helps. You know, ultimately don't. But actually what we're following is a process. You know, we have the 4 regulative principles, for example. We have the books, so many books. We have the Mayapur Institute, for that matter. We have our temples. We have preaching. It's a whole way of life. The different ashrams, with all the different considerations involved, and how to be a brahmachari, how to be a grihastha, how to be a vanaprastha, how to be a sannyasi. Ultimately, you don't need all that. All of it. You just chant Hare Krishna. End of story. But actually to facilitate ultimately the perfect chanting of Hare Krishna, there's this whole way of life. What to speak of deity worship, it's a whole way of life. And, you know, if you want to try it, just chanting Hare Krishna, and don't worry about anything to do with Varnashram, don't worry about reading the books or attending the Mayapur Institute, etc. Give it a try and report back to us, and we wish you good luck, because we think you'll need a lot of it. Yeah. In other words, we don't think it will work, actually. Because it's not quite so simple. It's simple. If you can be inoffensive, but to be inoffensive always, that's a big job. So it's a gradual process. And it's, you know, it's a highly scientific process. The way Prabhupada has given us the way of life of Krishna consciousness, it's amazing. You know, compared to, for example, his god brothers, a number of them were also preachers and trying to spread in one way or another and getting some disciples and gathering a bit of an institution. But none of them knew how to make that way of life so that you will actually come to that point like Srila Prabhupada did. Yeah. So in this way, I mean, it's a little subtle, but it's a very important point about the unique position of Srila Prabhupada. Okay, are we all right? Have you survived? Yes, doctor. You know what? Don't worry about that too much. If we had more time, we could go into sort of analyze each purport in detail. Just chant Hare Krishna and be extremely happy. And are you second initiated? Anyway, when you chant Gayatri also, including this Gayatri, and be extremely happy with that. Yeah. It's okay. So we're going to move on to five. Let's move on to five. So, and keep your yantra on hand, the right way up. Probably, yes, always the best. The surrounding external plane of Gokula is described in this verse. There is a mysterious quadrangular place named Sweta Dweep surrounding the outskirts of Gokula. What are we talking about there? Look at your yantra. You'll see that the outer edge is a square, actually, which is a type of quadrangle, right? Okay. So, that is Sweta Dweep. I'd say outside, it's outside the outer circle. This is Sweta Dweep. Are you with me? Got that. So it is divided into four parts on all sides. Or in other words, each side is a particular part. So there are four parts. The abode of Vasudev, Sankarshan, Pradyumna, and Aniruddha are separately located in each of these four parts. Let us look at our yantra again. The top, just beneath the text material, you'll see there right at the top it says Om Kreem Pradyumnaya Namaha. And beneath that it says Kreem. This is the top there is the abode of Pradyumna. Are you with me? You got that? We come around to our right, and it says Om Kreem. It's not very well spelt in terms of Sanskrit spelling, but it's meant to say Vasudevaya Namaha. Vasudevaya Namaha. We're on the right-hand side. It actually, what does it say? It's a little hard to say what it says. Well, it says Vasudevaya. That's what it says. It says Vasudevaya, but it's meant to say Vasudevaya. They left the U out. Namaha. At the bottom, turn it up the other way, it says Om Hrim Sankarshan. What does it say? Aniruddham Namaha. That's the abode of Aniruddha. Coming around the other side, this one here, there's only one left, and it's Sankarshan. Om Hrim Sankarshanam Namaha. And beneath it says Hrim. So, this is Sweta Dweep. Interesting little point, Dwarka, Mathura and Dwarka are part of Sweta Dweep. And these deities, Vasudev, Sankarshan, Pradyumna, Aniruddha, they are Dwarka deities. They're Dwarka deities. Yeah. This is Sweta Dweep then. Now, let's back to the book. I mean the actual Brahma Samhita. It gets a bit interesting. These four divided abodes are enveloped by the fourfold human requirements, such as piety, wealth, passion, and liberation, which is just a different way of saying dharma, dharma, artha, karma, and moksha. We've all heard of these four sort of stages in the development of religion, normally materialistic or materially tinged religion. So what he's saying is that in Swaita Dweep, you find the original forms of dharma, artha, karma, and moksha, but original in their pure states. Don't start thinking that, you know, if you're going to find karma, kandiya, accumulation of money, sense gratification, and then impersonal liberation, which is the normal sort of scheme of things with dharma, artha, karma, and moksha. These are the original forms, pure, completely Krishna conscious forms of dharma. Dharma meaning devotional service to Krishna. Artha meaning using things in devotional service. Karma meaning the bliss of devotional service. And moksha meaning going back to Godhead. This is the understanding that should be there. Not that like the materialistic dharma, artha, karma, and impersonal liberation are in Goloka Vrindavan, because they're not. Then let's carry on. Also, the four Vedas there, Rig, Sama, Yajura, and Atharva, which deal with the mantra and which are the bases of achievements of the fourfold mundane requirements. You understand the fourfold mundane requirements? Dharma, Artha, Karma, and Moksha. These are the original forms of the four Vedas as pure transcendental literatures, in which, he says, they deal with the mantra. And, you know, clean Krishna, Govindaya, Govijana, Vallabhaya, Swaha. This is high-level transcendental mantra. So these four Vedas are high-level transcendental literatures. They're not karma kandya. Normally when we talk about karma kandya, we're talking about these four Vedas. They are the karma kandya section of the Vedas. Rig, Sama, Yajur, and Atharva Vedas, except for the Upanishads, which are not part of them but connected with them, they're karma kandya. Yeah, they're basically karma kandya. But in their original forms in Swaita Dweep and Goloka Vrindavan, they're completely pure and Krishna conscious. Then, there are 10 tridents. Watch out for the tridents, which are fixed in the 10 directions. They are the modes of material nature. What are they? Things like mystical powers. There are 10 of them, and they're tridents. And if you try and enter, and you're not qualified, you get caught on one of the tridents. The three modes, the three phases of time. There's 10. I only have 6 listed here. 3 modes in their pure form, because in Goloka there is Sattva, Rajas, and Niveshastva, Tamas. Yeah. But in their pure forms, Radha, Krishna's attraction to Radha is pure passion. So the tridents, though, are, you know, they're protective devices. They're the material forms of these things which keep out the unqualified. Then, let's see, what else? The 8 jewels, these are transcendental jewels. Let's not get into them too much. They're the dikpals, the protectors of the directions. Then here, this now, it becomes very interesting. The associates of the hues of blue, yellow, red, and white. What do you think this is talking about? What do you think? You're intelligent. I didn't hear. Okay, they're the yuga avatars. The yuga avatars are in Svetadu with their main associates, including Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya is in Svetadweep, in Goloka Vrindavan. His abode, his Navadweep is there. And, well, let's just keep looking at, let's look at the purport. Sure. Where are we? In Svetadweep, now we are in the second paragraph, which begins, the devotees who are imbued with all love. Are you with me? You got that? Down that paragraph somewhere, it says, it's just to keep it simple. You'll see in the middle of the second paragraph, the gist of the whole matter is this. Can you see that?
Yes.
All right. Goloka Svetadweep is eternally manifest because the pleasures of enjoyment of the rasa could not be had in its entirety in the pastimes of Krishna in Vraja. Wow, that's a pretty heavy statement, isn't it? In other words, Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan, they need something added to make them complete. And this is found in Svetadweep. So, Krishna accepts the emotion and effulgence of his predominated moiety, his beloved, Sri Radhika, and makes an eternal pastime for the enjoyment of Krishna Rasa there. Sri Krishna Chandra, coveting to taste the following pleasures, to realize, one, the nature of the greatness of love of Sri Radha, two, the nature of the wonderful sweetness of his love, of which Sri Radhika has got the taste, and three, the nature of the exquisite joy that accrues to Sri Radha, that she receives by her realization of the sweetness of his love. In order to realize these things, the same Lord Krishna took his birth like the moon in the ocean of the womb of Sri Sachidevi. Yeah. So, in other words, Sweta Dweep is extremely important because through it, Krishna, as Lord Chaitanya, realizes these three things which had not been realized by Krishna in Vraja. I mean, this is sort of standard Chaitanya Leela understandings. But this is how it works in the context of Goloka, or Gokula for that matter, in the context of the Yantra. Do you follow this? You understand that Krishna, Krishna's pastimes, Krishna himself, everything is not really complete without him taking the form of Lord Chaitanya. Then it becomes complete because he realizes these three things. But only as Lord Chaitanya. He needs to do that. Otherwise he won't and doesn't realize these things. And Lord Chaitanya is there in Sweta Dweep, the outer part. Therefore, Sweta Dweep, the place where Lord Chaitanya, where Krishna realizes these things as Lord Chaitanya, Sweta Dweep is very important, essential, to make Krishna Leela complete.
Just a little recap, this I'm very helpful. So this Sweta Dweep is a square.
Sweta Dweep is everything outside the last circle.
And we have Pradyumna on top.
Pradyumna is Pradyumna. Next is Vasudev. At the bottom is Aniruddha. And on the left side is Sankarsana.
So where is Lord Chaitanya?
He's there. He's there. He's definitely there.
And the four Vedas are also in the...
They're there. You know, I don't know. I don't want to speculate. But the alphabets are there. Maybe they're there. But they're in Sweta Dweep. This is the creation of some artist. Yeah. Yes, it has the Yuga avatars, it has the original Vedas, the original Dharma Artikala Moksha, Lord Chaitanya, his associates, the associates of the Yuga avatars, they're all in Sweta Dweep. They're all in this, outside the outer circle, inside the square, somewhere. Yes, outskirts of Goloka. Are you okay? Anyone have real difficulty getting that? I think it's sort of understandable enough. So, well done, devotees. Congratulations. It's probably the most difficult part of the whole thing. Although the next part is also not simple, but it is easier. What we'll do now, devotees, we will take a 10-minute break to give your minds a chance to refresh. Okay, so please be back by 5 past, according to this clock here. Srila Prabhupada King. Hare Krishna. Let us continue. Last verse in this section, and you know, the sections I just sort of, it seemed to me like they were natural sections. So verse 6 is about Krishna and his position. It's, I would say, an elaboration on the first verse. I don't think we really need to go into it in detail. All glories to Lord Krishna. Let us go on now to verse 7. If you look at your guide, you'll see that verse from 7 to 21, it's about the process. It's about the process of the material creation. It is very interesting, a little complicated. I don't think it's as difficult as the first 6 verses, but let's see. Okay, so this is now, beginning with verse 7, the process, the steps, the different stages in the material creation. So what happens first? That's what's said in verse 7. Let's have a look at it. Krishna never consorts with his illusory energy. He never gets involved with. Still, the illusory energy is not completely like alienated from him. And particularly, when he wants to create or recreate, re-manifest the material world, then, I mean, it's a bit of a way out point, I must say. Then he says that the amorous pastime, he's talking about the amorous pastime of Krishna, or even particularly it'll be Mahavishnu, actually, because he's the one who's involved in the process of creation. So the consort of Lord of Mahavishnu is Rama. As Radha is to Krishna, Lakshmi is to Narayan, Sita is to Ram, Rama, long, the second A is long. Rama Devi is to Mahavishnu. Yes. So, and they have amorous, loving, conjugal pastimes. Perhaps they embrace sometimes, and you know, all these types of conjugal activities. So the point he's making here is that when Krishna, or most particularly Mahavishnu, wants to recreate the material world, then he does it in a way which is kind of related to those conjugal pastimes. It is actually a material form of such amorous conjugal pastimes, which otherwise are going on completely transcendentally. This is what he says here. When he intends to create the material world, the amorous pastime in which he consorts, in which he interacts with Rama, it is the amorous pastime is an auxiliary activity. You understand auxiliary? It's like a background, supporting type of background to what he does with Rama when they want to create, when he wants to create the material world. And he does it, so it's like a reflection or a sort of a version, even a perverted form actually, of the loving pastimes that the Lord has with his consort. And he does it, as the verse says, by glancing at the deluding energy. Let's go on to 8. This is now, we're going to develop the whole idea. Okay, we're in verse 8. So, Rama Devi, who is the consort of Mahavishnu, is the regulatrix of all entities. I guess you would understand from that it's got something to do with regulating them. Although I must say, I looked in the Oxford Dictionary. There is no such word. But it's okay. Let's not worry about it. But that's the idea. You know, at the end of the previous creation, all the conditioned souls went into the body of Mahavishnu. And Rama Devi, you know where she lives? Generally, not always, but generally, in the body of Mahavishnu. And in his body, she kind of, you know, manages the conditioned souls while they're within his body, and then when it's time for the next creation and they're meant to come out into the next material creation, she manages that. She gets them out into the right places. That's the idea. Rama Devi, you know. Well, actually, I think it's going to be mentioned in due course. Mahavishnu is normally in yoga nidra, apparently, you know, sleeping. But he's not sleeping. He is in a spiritual trance. And his consciousness, which is otherwise, you know, he's looking around and doing things external to himself. In this case, his consciousness is focused within. So it looks like he's, you know, unconscious. But he's conscious. He's fully, he's always fully conscious. And his consciousness is within. Why is it within? Because Rama Devi is within. And they're having pastimes together. This is how Mahavishnu, not always, but often, has his pastimes with his consort, internally, not externally, sometimes externally, but particularly in this case, internally. And those pastimes, oh, they are so amazing, that his consciousness just gets totally drawn in. And therefore externally he's apparently asleep or not aware of what's going on. That's just as a background. So here we go. We're in the translation. Oh, yes,
what kind of pastimes he has with Rama Devi?
I think they dance and they... Yeah, they're conjugal. They're definitely conjugal. As Radha is to Krishna, Rama Devi is to Mahavishnu. She is his consort. She's an expansion of Radharani. Yes. As Sita is. So, yeah, I'm sure they have all sorts of wonderful, wonderful pastimes.
Is this taking place in a particular location? Or just
within him. As he is lying there in the causal ocean, the Viraja. Yeah. So let's go back to the translation. So the divine plenary portion of Krishna creates the mundane world. That's Mahavishnu. That's Mahavishnu. At creation, at the time when the process of creation is starting, a divine halo of the nature of his own subjective portion, swamsa, a divine halo which swa-angsa, swa means his own, and angsa means like extension or even limb. So a divine halo of his own nature, it manifests. Yes, it appears. This halo is the divine Shambhu. I'm just reading the translation here. The masculine symbol or manifested emblem of the Supreme Lord. Let's see. Anyway, so this is, I think you've heard of the manifestation of the glance before. This is the glance of Mahavishnu. It's being referred to as a halo. It's his glance. He is looking at the material world, Maya. But this glance, you can see. You know, I'm glancing at all of you right now. But you cannot see the glance. But you look at me when I'm glancing at you, and you know my glance is on you. But Mahavishnu, when he glances, his glance is a thing. It's actually a person called Shambhu. Yes. And you can see Shambhu. He looks like a halo. I mean, I don't know if halo is exactly the most suitable word. Maybe it is. But it's like a shaft of light. It's something like that. Halo means light, for sure. So it's like a shaft of light going from his eyes and entering into what is at that point the inert, immobile, totally everything is mixed up, material nature, which at this point is called pradana. Are you familiar? Do you know what pradana means? Pradana means the material nature when everything is just mixed up. The modes are there, earth, water, fire, air, ether, etc. All these things are there, but they're all mixed up together like a soup. And then Mahavishnu glances, and that glance, which is Shambhu, which is alive, our glance is not alive. It's an extension of our life, but it's not actually living. His glance is living, and his glance enters the material nature. Through it, the living entities, under the supervision of Rama Devi, they are injected into the womb of the material nature. And the process well. This is all part of the process. Yes.
Hello.
You know, Sadashiva, according to Prabhupada, in, what is it, the chapter of Adi Leela dealing with Advaita Acharya, Sadashiva is a pastime form of Lord Vishnu who has his own Vaikuntha planet. That's what Prabhupada says. I'd rather leave it at that. Yeah. So then that Shambhu comes. Shambhu is a form of Lord Shiva. And Shambhu injects living entities into the womb of Maya, who is expanded from Ramadevi. So Shiva is Shiva as Shambhu in this case is expanded from Mahavishnu. Maya Devi is expanded from Rama Devi, and as the, in material terms, the original male, in material terms, Lord Shiva injects the living entities from the body of Mahavishnu, where they've been for some time, into the womb of Maya, who is his wife. This is the original material act of reproduction. And in fact, it's described in precisely these terms in these verses. Let's keep looking a bit more at the translation of verse 8. The conceiving, well, we're about two-thirds of the way down the translation. The conceiving potency in regard to mundane creation makes her appearance out of the supreme regular tricks. You follow that, right? Maya Devi comes from Rama Devi, in other words. She is Maya. The limited, non-absolute upper up potency. The symbol of mundane feminine productivity. The intercourse of these two brings forth the faculty of perverted cognition. The reflection of the seed of the procreative desire of the Supreme Lord. So in other words, when Shambhu, Shiva, contacts Maya, perverted consciousness manifests. Yeah, material consciousness. The reflection of the procreative desire means lust. Lust makes the world go round. No, love, but actually means lust. Yeah. So for more on this, let's just go on to verse 9. This is very explicit. And you know, it's perhaps a little extraordinary for a sannyasi to present to a mixed audience or any audience, but it's just what it is. All offspring of the consort of the great Lord Maheshvara means Shambhu or Shiva, who's also known as Maheshvara. So all the offspring of the consort means Maya. All the children who come are of the nature of the embodiment of the mundane masculine and feminine generative organs. This is a little biology lesson, but I think you understand. You're all big boys and big girls. You know what these things are. And devotees, this is the Shiva Linga. I mean, if you're from a Hindu background, you know that. If you're not, you might wonder, what is this Shiva Linga thing? It is the male organ of Lord Shiva within the female organ of Maya Devi, And it's the process, it's this process. He is injecting the living entities from Mahavishnu into Maya Devi's womb. Yeah, that's how it works, isn't it? It may sound a little pornographic to some. And in fact, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta makes an important point in that regard in the purport here of verse 9. If you look, it's about halfway down or two-thirds down the purport. What now? He says, all the information that has been accumulated by the agency of the sciences of this world, well, that's not very clear. Trees. Anyway, all living entities possess the reproductive organs, in some cases both in one body, but generally we get a male and you get a female, and that's life in this world. The feature, trees, plants, and even all insentient entities are embodiments of the co-union of male and female. The feature that is of special significance is that although such expressions as the generative organs of male and female are indecorous. You understand that word? Like rude, you know, not tasteful to talk about sexual organs. Indecorous, it's not, you know, good manners to start just having a chat about sexual organs. But yet in scientific literature, these words expressing the above-mentioned principles are exceedingly wholesome. Means they're very nice. They're very good. And wholesome means like very, very nice and accessible to anyone. And productive of abiding value. Indecorum is merely an entity pertaining to the external custom of society. And you know, frankly, the fact is, panimatya, nirabhotat, rabhotat, no nirpanimatya. Okay, stiratus, that's Gopa, that's Roshan. Let's see. Indecorum, where were we? Indecorum is merely an entity pertaining to the external custom of society. But science, and especially the highest science, which this is, cannot destroy the true entity by deference to social custom. In other words, we have to tell the truth. Tell it like it is. This is what it is. So next time you see a Shiva linga, understand what it is. Because that's what it is. Actually. Good luck to you. Yes, brother.
What's the purpose of those who worship Shiva?
Yeah.
What's their purpose?
Well, you know, the purpose should be to recognize the process of creation or procreation, yeah, reproduction within the material world, and respect those personalities who are the originators, the original participants in the process of material reproduction. in this case on, you know, a universal scale, not just one child or two or three, but just zillions and massive, massive numbers, all of them. They enter the material world through this process, which the Shiva Linga is just directly displaying. You get the idea? Yeah. And you may think, oh, you know, sexual organs, this is all a bit, whew. In terms of social standards, to talk about such things, yes. But here we're talking about the original process in the creation of the material world. Are you okay with that? Is everyone okay? Well, verse 10, all right. It's just really repeating it, the idea. Shambhu and Maya, representing the different organs and the different functions in material creation. Just a sec. I gotta look up something here. Just a sec, I'll be with you. Okay. So there's a significant difference and a permanent difference. But at the same time, yogurt is simply a form of milk. It's not another thing like a vegetable. So you can't separate Lord Shiva from Lord Vishnu completely. He is a form of Lord Vishnu. And therefore amongst the guna avatars, he's higher than Lord Brahma because he's actually a type of form, special, extraordinary form, but still a type of form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Lord Brahma is one of us, and we've all been Lord Brahma before. So Lord Shiva's position is higher. Yeah. And therefore he's sacred. And, you know, even his name, Shiva, means auspicious, pure, sacred. And, you know, in other words, it is the process of Mahavishnu for developing material life, for the purpose of facilitating the living entities going back to Godhead. That's what it is. And the sacredness is in terms of its connection with Lord Vishnu and his program for bringing about the pro- pro- process for taking us back to Godhead. If the material world didn't get manifested again, nobody would go back to Godhead. They'd just stay in Mahavishnu. I mean, in a sense, it's not very sacred. It is material. It's the prototype, if you understand that word, the original form of the material reproductive process. That's exactly what it is. Yes?
Sometimes it's mentioned that the little flower, the stem of the little flower, is a combination of all living entities.
Yeah. Well, not exactly as I understand a combination, but the living entities are within the stem of the lotus initially until Brahma becomes enlightened and then begins the process of engineering the planets, and then he brings out the living entities from the stem and puts them on the planets. Yeah.
That means that Shambhu and Prabhadevi, their union happens before.
Yes. Yes, it's the total material creation. It's the pradana. Yeah. Yeah. Babaji?
Going back to the jhampa, I have a question. When you, I don't know if I missed something when I was in the bridge, but you're talking about Ramadevi?
Ramadevi.
And you said before that there are artists here who do the name because they need Ramadevi.
Yeah, they're just
could
there.
So,
Ramadevi is not in the yantra.
But there was the word Ram was writing in the yantra.
Huh?
The word Ram.
Oh, that's something else. It's just a Bij mantra. It's not her. She is elsewhere. She's in the causal ocean between the spiritual world and the material world with her husband Mahavishnu. Yeah. Now from verse 11, yeah, there's a discussion about Mahavishnu and the other Vishnus, which we can, I think, fairly quickly maybe go through. Let's look at verse 11, the translation. It's just introducing Mahavishnu. So he possesses thousands of thousands. That's a lot. Of heads, eyes, hands. He's the source of thousands of avatars. In his thousands of subjective portions, he is the creator of thousands of individual souls. You know, a couple of points we could note there is that the avatars that come to this material world, those who have eternal abodes in Vaikuntha, when they come as avatars to appear in this world, they come through Mahavishnu. There are some who do not have abodes in Vaikuntha. They reside, you know, they appear from time to time, then they go back into Mahavishnu and they stay there. Their position, when they're not doing their avatar thing, their position is in Mahavishnu. So one way or the other, whether it's in the sense of the avatars coming from Vaikuntha through him into the world, or just from him into the world, what's being stated here is appropriate. He is the source of thousands of avatars. Yeah. Mahavishnu, even Krishna often comes through Mahavishnu. just because it's the normal program. Yeah. Just to respect the system. Just like the government respects the laws. Yeah. I mean, maybe it's something like that. Then he's the creator of thousands of individual souls. Anyway, don't worry about that one too much. He doesn't actually create them. Of course, in a sense he does, that he sends them out into the material world again at the time of the next creation. So then you could say in that sense he's the creator. But it's not that they were non-existent and he has now brought them into existence from a state of non-existence. Let's go on. Yeah?
Because of this statement, some people are arguing that Mahavishnu is the source of the jiva.
Okay, Hari Bol. Our answer to that is Hari Bol. Good luck to them. You know, if you want to get technical about it, the Sanskrit does not say that. It doesn't say that. It's sort of an expanded translation. The Sanskrit is sahasra su. Sahasra means thousands or thousands of thousands. Su means mother or source. Su, something like mother, source. But, you know, every mother, they have children. Those children are eternal souls. The mother may give the body, but actually the person is the soul. So, yeah. In Jiva Goswami's translation, he doesn't use this term creator. I forget the exact terminology, but it's definitely a broader sense. Yeah. So let's see. Verse 12 is kind of defining who is Mahavishnu. He is known as Narayan sometimes. And from him has come the causal ocean. And then he lies down in the causal ocean in the state of divine sleep, yoga nidra. This is what verse 12 is saying. Even though, you know, the language may be a little more involved. Now verse 13. This is important. The spiritual seeds of Sankarshan, existing in the pores of skin of Mahavishnu, are born as so many golden spurs. These sperms are covered with five great elements. You know what these are? These are the universes. And in verse 14, that is clarified. The same Mahavishnu entered into each universe. So in other words, in verse 13, where it says that in the pores of the skin of Mahavishnu are so many golden sperms, he's referring to the universe. And then, in verse 14, Mahavishnu, the universe has come out of the pores of the skin of Mahavishnu, and then Mahavishnu expands into each one as Garbhodakshay Vishnu. And, for that matter, from him comes Shiradakshay Vishnu. From Garbhodakshay. Are you okay? okay, or are you not okay?
Can you repeat it, Maharaj?
Would you mind? Okay. So we just read in verse, was it 13, I think, in the pores of the skin. If you understand the pores of the skin, little sort of indentations in your skin, little golden balls, which he calls golden sperms. If you understand the word sperm, they come out and enter into the material, you know, the whole material thing, which is already being, having the living entities injected into it. So the universes come and they start floating around there in the material sphere. And then Mahavishnu expands into each universe as Garbhadaksha Vishnu, from whose navel comes the lotus flower, not yet, but in due course will come, which then blooms, and Lord Brahma comes through the lotus stem and pops out on top of the lotus flower, the first one. Is that okay? Right. And then, before that, Garbhadaksha Vishnu expands in each atom as Shiradaksha Vishnu, who also has an abode in each universe, in an area of the universe where there's an ocean of milk. That's why it's called Shiradaksha or Kiradaksha, because Shir or Kir means milk. Yeah. Are you okay with that? Silence means consent. Okay. So verse 15 is interesting. Let's just have a little look there. The same Mahavishnu created Vishnu from his left limb, Brahma the first progenitor of beings from his right limb, and from the space between his two eyebrows, Shambhu, the divine masculine manifested Hela. We already talked about Shambhu. He's just repeating about Shambhu. But this is new. Vishnu coming from his left arm and Brahma coming from his right arm. Well, the Vishnu is Shiradaksha Vishnu. The Brahma is, the purport says, Hiranyagarbha. I know it's a bit complicated. I'm sorry. But you're all intelligent. Hiranyagarbha is the original form of Lord Brahma. And he, so to speak, he doesn't exactly expand, it's not the right way to put it. You know, generally, the Lord Brahma in each universe is a jiva soul. But he is empowered by Hiranyagarbha Brahma, who is the original Lord Brahma, who possesses the creative potency for the whole, not just universe, the whole thing, the whole material creation. And Shambhu, you know, there he was, the glands, and he impregnated his wife Maya. He, you know, it's not totally clear, but it appears that either he himself, but I think he expands into another form of Shambhu, who is known as Rudra. In fact, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta puts it in terms like that. So these people are the original forms of the guna avatars. The guna avatars. Yeah. And they don't, and they expand either themselves personally or through empowering some living entity. One way or the other, they expand into each universe. So Shambhu, or the original Rudra, expands as the Lord Shiva, who is the popular demigod worshipped in each universe. And Hiranyagarbha gives his potency to the Jiva soul who's taking up the role of creator, Brahma, in each universe. And Vishnu does something. Well, Vishnu is like the original form, at least, of Garbhadaksha Vishnu. How does that sound? Yes.
So Hiranyagarbha is an eternal expansion form of the Lord.
He's expanded from the Lord. That's a fact. That's what it says. From Mahavishnu's right arm. And he embodies the total material creative Shakti, which he then distributes to all the Brahmas in each universe. That's what this verse is saying. And Shiva expands himself into each universe. Yeah. Yeah. Well, we're doing good, actually. I mean, I feel quite good. I don't know how you feel. If your brains have burnt out yet. Yes, probably.
There is a parallel between the appearance of Lord Rudra in the material world, when Bharat became angry at the Kumara,
yes.
Similarly, here he appears from between the two eyebrows of Vishnu.
That's right. There is no, that's Shambhu, the glass.
So you could we say that this is like a pervertation?
It's something, yeah. From between the eyes of Lord Brahma. It's like a reflection of the same procedure. Yeah, yeah. We actually only have a couple more verses in this section, and we will have covered some really good ground, actually. In fact, it's just fantastic. So, 16, you know, we already mentioned the mundane, egotistic principle when Shambhu impregnates Maya, along with the process of impregnation, as it happens, then material consciousness is stimulated. And for that matter, Lord Shambhu himself, Lord Shiva, becomes affected by that material consciousness. And this is what changes him into yogurt. This is the actual thing. The contact with Maya and the sort of the energy which manifests when they contact in the process of impregnation. The mundane, egotistic principle. And the last verse in this section, I think, isn't it? Oh, it's not. Anyway, last one will do today. 17. Thereupon the same great personal Godhead, assuming the threefold forms of Vishnu, Prajapati means Lord Brahma, or actually Hiranyagarbha, and Shambhu, and then entering into the mundane universe, plays the pastimes of preservation, creation, and destruction of this world. This pastime is contained in the mundane world. Hence, it being perverted, therefore, because it's perverted, the Supreme Lord, identical with Mahavishnu, prefers to consort with Yoga Nidra or Rama Devi. Like this. So he prefers to not get too involved in the mechanics of it all. Let's go on to 18. Let's have a go. When Vishnu, lying in the ocean of milk, wills to create the universe, a golden lotus springs from his navel pit. Hang on. That there's something which looks very confusing here. Oh my God, did you pick it up? And it's potentially extremely confusing. When Vishnu, lying in the ocean of milk, wills to create this universe, a golden lotus springs from his navel pit, Hari Bol. Didn't we always think it was Gavadakshaya Vishnu? Well, it is. It's Kala Dakshaya Vishnu. But the thing is that Shira Dakshaya Vishnu is not different from Gada Dakshaya Vishnu. These three, Mahavishnu, Gada Dakshaya Vishnu, Shira Dakshaya Vishnu, are one in three. And that's the principle here. Because we've read so many times, like in the Bhagavata, Gava Dakshaya Vishnu, lotus flower, Lord Brahma. So it is actually Gava Dakshaya Vishnu in that subtle sense that they're not different. And just as a matter of interest, Jiva Goswami, because when I saw this, I thought, what happened? So I looked at Jiva Goswami's translation, and he just says Gava Dakshaya Vishnu. So it is Gava Dakshaya Vishnu, but because they're one, then you can also say it. You can say as if it's Shira Dakshaya Vishnu. And this golden lotus is the abode of Brahma. It will be in due course. You know, I think we've about had enough.
The Bhagavad says that all the different incarnations come into the material world through Garbhodakshaya Vishnu. Now, because you were saying that they come through Mahavishnu, is it what the Brahma Samhita is saying? It's a similar situation.
See, they're not different. When Lord Krishna goes with Arjuna to get the sons of the Brahmin couple back, you know that pastime? The end of the 10th canto. He goes to Mahavishnu. And Mahavishnu refers to him as being an incarnation of himself. In the sense that Krishna comes through Mahavishnu and Gaudadakshaya Vishnu. Because they're one in principle. So through Mahavishnu, they've entered the different universes through the Gada Dakshaya Vishnu in that universe. It's in that sort of sense. Devotees, congratulations. You did it. But I didn't see anyone fall asleep. That's amazing. So thank you very much for your good attention, kind attention. And we'll see you sharp at 10:30 tomorrow. Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur ki. Gauravananda.
Maharaj ki.